the work of Kazantsev. And so what really he did, he solved the problem of how the energy of magnetic field grow in the velocity field assumed to be very, very short correlated. Okay? But let me start at least from writing the equation. So it is the same equation as yesterday, that we are having a magnetic field that satisfies this equation. Velocity field will be supposed given, and the only thing that we'll need from this velocity field is that in Lagrangian frame, Lagrangian flow is chaotic. Okay, I'll later say a little bit more about it. And we have here a diffusion of magnetic field. If one forget about diffusion, if we have an ideal conductor, then this equation is the same equation that is satisfied by any material line element. Huh? And sanctuary. And so still I am in an ideal conductor so far. So in an ideal conductor, magnetic field is frozen, which means that it satisfies the same equation as any linear line element. And then we can easily say what is the behavior of line element. We know that if the flow is chaotic and it has a non-zero Lyapunov exponent, then any length of any linear element would grow exponentially with an exponent which is this Lyapunov exponent. We also may say a lot if velocity field is delta correlated. And again, because we consider large Prandtl number, which means that viscosity of the fluid is much larger than diffusivity, that means that on the scale where we work, we always may say that velocity field could be expanded R12J. And it's enough to restrict ourselves by the first term of the expansion. And this sigma is something which is locally space independent, but in time it may fluctuate in a Lagrangian frame. And then one may say that if this sigma or this velocity is assumed to be very, very short correlated, in this case it's very easy, again, without diffusivity in an ideal situation, to write the equation how any moment of magnetic field, which is of course the same behavior as any moment of line element, so how it behaves with time, and it is easy to show that it grows exponentially with E in, here is some, I would call it E because for n equal to 2, it is an energy in some potential. And this E, let me write here of 0, which means that kappa is equal to 0, T. And this is a nice formula which you can find in any textbook, that En is equal to the first Lyapunov exponent, and then it is 2n, I guess, n plus 3, if I'm not mistaken, over 4. Let me choose some normalization, and then I will follow it for the rest of my talk. So it will be it will be this normalization. And this is a very old result. Here is actually space dimensionality. So it's a very old result by Fürstenberg and probably other people, that when you consider n equal to minus d, where d is space dimensionality, then the element does not grow. For n equal to 0, of course, it's just a constant, it does not grow. So En as a function of n, by Hölder, it is a convex function. It passes through 0 at 0. It passes through 0 at minus d. So it is something like this. Okay? And this is a very old, well-known result. That's what would happen if we have ideal conductor. Now, what Kazantsev really did... He found E2 of kappa going to plus 0. And it was at 68. Okay? And what he really found, if you substitute here n equal to 2, then what you get, and d equal to 3, then what you get lambda 1, 10 over 4. Yeah? Oh, 10 over 3, sorry. And what Kazantsev did, and Stas mentioned this yesterday, he solved this problem with a non-zero kappa, again, for the same assumption of a short correlated velocity field, and he got E2 equal to lambda 1, 10 over 8. And that's a different answer, which is kappa independent. Okay? Well, of course, for turbulent people is nothing so surprising, and every turbulent theoretician would love to call this anomaly, or probably experimentalist would call it some other way. So the answer for very small but positive diffusivity, they are different from answer for zero diffusivity. And of course, I mean, there is no contradiction here, because really there are two limits here when I consider this behavior. There is limit of time going to infinity, and there is limit of kappa going to zero. And of course, this is the answer when I take this limit first and then second. And this is the answer when I have this limit first and this second. So these two limits, of course, don't commute. That's the meaning of anomaly or whatever you call it. This is the meaning of finite dissipation being present even when diffusivity coefficient goes to zero. Okay, so, and then what we do know, that the true answer for non-zero resistivity which exists is somewhere here. It's not here. Okay? And that means that the whole curve should change. And the problem for a long time was, what is really this curve? And first of all, in this case of delta-correlated, short-correlated velocity field. The first question was, what is the form of this curve at any n for non-zero kappa? And physically it's very important. Not that I would care about numerical value here, but what is really important is the slope of this curve at zero. Because dEn over dN at n equal to zero is a growth rate of magnetic field. It is the behavior of logarithm of B divided by time, as time going to infinity. It has a very simple physical meaning. If you put your probe in absolutely arbitrary part of the flow and you ask if the magnetic field will grow, the answer is yes, it will grow or decay if this value is negative, with probability 1 as time goes to unity. So in a way, this quantity is even more important from the viewpoint of, let's say, that you ask what is the magnetic field that you really observe. But of course, energy is also important. It's dynamically important. So in a way, the basic question was, first of all, what is the form of this curve at any n? And this is could be easily calculated, and I'll show you our results. And the second question was, of course, is the slope is positive, or it might be that our curve is now something like this, which means that the energy grows, but magnetic field in any realization decays, which is perfectly possible. And another question was, if you forget about this unphysical assumption of short correlated velocity field, what can we say about general velocity field? Can we formulate any criterion? What is necessary for velocity field? And again, I'm always talking about this situation. Large Prandtl number. So I consider velocity field in the viscous interval. But I do know that it is not delta correlated in time. No, as long as you have En, this is a short correlated velocity field, this is a short correlated velocity field. No, and that's the central subject of our work. Okay, so the first question was to get everything for delta correlated case in order. Just a minute, so I'll finish this. And the second problem was to consider arbitrary velocity field, which means still specially smooth, like it is in the viscous interval, but fluctuated in time, not in a short correlated way, and get what is the condition for such a flow to generate dynamo. In two meanings. First, in having E2 positive, and second, in having this slope positive. Okay, another question. No, they are different. You have some of my co-author. You have my co-author around you, and he can. Okay, at the end, I'll just write two formulas, and they are different. And for n equal 2, they are also different. Those answers are different, okay? Misha, okay, probably it's time to put some part of responsibility. So this is the work which I am now going... This was kind of a review of previous stuff. This is a work done by Chertkov, Kolokolov, Vergasola, and myself. And I'm... Now we'll explain what we really... I forgot to mention one more beautiful result. Really, on this way from not short correlated velocity field to an arbitrary velocity field, I mean, still finite correlated, but with arbitrary correlation time, there was a very beautiful work by Gruzinov, Cowley, and Sudan, who kind of almost showed, at least, I mean, as a physicist, I spent almost a month trying to refute their argument, and it's still not a proof, but it's a very, very compelling argument that this E2 is positive as long as you have non-zero Lyapunov exponent. As will be clear from our work, this is a true statement. We'll prove even more than this. We'll prove that all E are positive when there is a non-zero Lyapunov exponent. But, I mean, this work, I mean, really was, I guess, the first step beyond the delta-correlated case. And it was Cowley, Sudan, and Gruzinov. Okay, now our work, and so actually this problem happened to be very simple. Because of recent progress in analyzing this kind of flow, which are spatially smooth but temporally random, and then every two elements in the spatially smooth flow separate exponentially because velocity difference, which is time derivative of the distance, is proportional to the distance itself. So any distance would grow exponentially, and it gives rise to all kinds of nice theorems that you can apply. In a way, it's a smart way of taking logarithm. So first, I'll show you some kind of a general notion. So what we would like to do, we have this velocity field with sigma. Sigma now will be absolutely general matrix, and it's a matrix of velocity derivative, strain matrix. It depends on time in an absolutely general way. The only thing that it has a finite correlated time. So when I go to a very large time, I integrate over many, many correlation time. And in such velocity field, of course, I can write a formal solution of my equation for magnetic field, which would be the following. I have to define evolution matrix, it should be multiplied by B taken at k of 0 and 0. Why I am solving my equation in Fourier space? Because I have to account for diffusion, and this is easier when I do it in Fourier space where I have k squared. So first, before finishing this formula, let me define this W. W is my evolution matrix in this velocity field, which means that it satisfies the equation like this. They're all matrices. Okay? So, in a sense, my distance between two points satisfies this equation. So I may study vectors. Okay? My B satisfies this in a Lagrangian frame if I neglect diffusion. Any wave vector satisfies this equation. Okay? So instead of solving them separately, I'll just solve this for the matrix, and then this will be an evolution matrix. If I solve it from time 0 to time t, this W, then W will give me evolution of B, W transpose would give me evolution of K, etc. So actually my problem will be to study the statistics of something like this with a statistics of that given. Arbitrary in a way, not delta correlated, but some kind of note. Okay, so now let me finish this formula. What I really need here, I also need a diffusion factor, and it's more convenient for us to write it with the current wave number. So we have to integrate on time from 0 to t, and this is taken at time t at some point in space k. And here I will have k squared of t prime integrated over dt prime, okay? And k squared, and k as a function of time, by definition, I define it in this way, is w transpose multiply of t prime of t prime. Let me be accurate, what my students always teach me. So it is d over dt. It depends on two times, and it's of time, and it's of two times. Because it's evolution operator, it depends on starting time and finishing time. And here is the derivative with respect to this time. It is this and this, okay? And also here I have this. K at two different times also are related by this metric. And this is, again, expression that you can find it, well, I guess in any textbook, or at least there are many papers that, in which it was written. And then what I have to do? I have now to make inverse Fourier transform, take moments of this, and average with respect to the statistics of W. And W will come here, and W will come here. That's basically what Grudzinov, Cowley, and Sudan also wrote. Now, what is new? That now we perfectly understand what is the statistics of this guy W. Okay? And so let me make kind of a short digression, which I believe is interesting by itself. And let's ask, what is the statistics of, I mean, this really describes to you how any fluid element behaves this time in a viscous interval of turbulence, or in a random, specially smooth flow. It is clear what happens to it. It is somehow rotated, it is stretched in some direction, and it is contracted in other direction. Okay? And, well, generally, even already here, I can consider also a compressible problem, but kind of it's easier for me to stay with an incompressible, and at the end, I'll tell what the modification in compressible. Okay, so this notation. So what can be said? That any such matrix, W, could be presented as one orthogonal matrix, some diagonal matrix, and another orthogonal matrix. This will be our matrix, which it is diagonal matrix, which defines how the our element stretched and contracted. And so we introduce, this is a definition of variables. So row 1, row 2, row 3 will be our stochastic variable, and we'll be looking to say something about their probability distribution. Okay? Now, these two orthogonal matrices that really rotate things, okay? What is very important, and it's a very old statement, which, of course, I guess Misha Cherkov probably rediscovered first, and then, I mean, we rediscovered it kind of over and over again, but it's really a very old statement, going back to 60s and to works by Seledets and to Tubalin and other people. The statement is that this matrix is asymptotically constant when time going to infinity. And let me give you a simple physical meaning of it without mathematics. It's really the following statement that, well, of course, everything rotates in space. So, I mean, this guy, but what also can change is that some direction in which you already stretched a lot may, after a long time, come back and turn into contracting direction. The statement is that it does not happen with the probability approaching one as time goes to infinity. I mean, which is kind of intuitively absolutely clear. And this is the statement. That the moment you are already in this rotating reference frame, your direction of the main stretching will always be your direction of the main stretching when time goes to infinity. It's absolutely improbable that this will turn into direction of construction. This is basically the meaning of oscillator theory, at least on the projection of my simple-minded physicist understanding. Okay, and so actually, and that simplifies a lot. That tells you that instead of studying 8 elements of this matrix, as long as I'm, let's say, interested in moments of B, B in the power, taking a single point, they are all rotationally invariant, so they are independent on this. I can forget about this stuff. And what I do have is only 3 variables And I have to know something about statistics of these three variables, which are stretching contraction rates, if you wish. Okay? And then one may ask, okay, so what I really need, I need a probability distribution function of these three quantities. That's it. Then I can express here everything in terms of them. Okay? Now, what is known about this probability distribution function? Of course, if I would have only single quantity, okay, if I would have not a vector, not a matrix with the equation like this, but just a scalar, if I would have equation something like this, sigma x, and this is some random function of time, then you would immediately tell me what is the probability distribution function of x, of logarithm x. Okay? That's clear. That I may write it as d over dt of logarithm x is equal to sigma of time. So logarithm is an integral of sigma dt prime. And as far as this time of integration is getting much larger than the correlation time of my sigma, then I have a central limit theorem which tells me that the probability of this guy, logarithm x, will be Gaussian. Of course, you may be also interested in the probability of having the big deviation, and they are already not described by a Gaussian core, but then you have a large deviation statement which really tells you that if you introduce y, which is logarithm of x, our rho, they are logarithms. Okay? They are here in the exponents. So the PDF of y, it has the following form. This is so-called large deviation theory, which actually tells you that when time and of course it's only a statement for time going to infinity. Okay? And it actually tells you, I mean, this function has a minimum at zero. It is positive everywhere. It is quadratic near its minimum. This quadratic part is exactly Gaussian part, which corresponds to central limit theorem. And their tails, they are already non-universal. Then they depend on the statistics of sigma. What do you really have? That's the simple statement that you can find in the... It's kind of, this kind of problem appears also in statistical physics when you take thermodynamic limits. That's why this function is called also entropy function. In mathematical literature, it is called Cramer function or rate function. What is nice about this problem? That it is exactly the same. That what you have for one variables, you need some work to show it, and there are, I guess, different people did this in different ways. But what you can really guarantee that as time going to infinity, and that's the only situation that we need time going to infinity, our probability distribution is something like this. Actually, as long as we have incompressible fluid, rho 3 is always equal to minus rho 1 minus rho 2, so it's not an independent variable. Okay, so we know that this function is positive, and now the problem is where actually its minimum, because its minimum is the probability maximum, okay? And here comes the Lyapunov exponent. It's a definition that this function has a minimum at lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3. When this variable is equal to lambda 1, this is equal to lambda 2, this is equal to lambda 3. I cannot calculate those numbers starting from this. Only for short correlated case I can do it. Okay? So this is now a definition. I am not calculating these numbers. I am saying to you that if I have a random flows, then this entropy function has a maximum at some point. The coordinates of that point I call lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3. It's, of course, they are exactly the definitions of Lyapunov exponents, because they determine me how this direction grow, okay? Rho 1 over t is lambda, which means that exponent of rho 1 behaves as exponent of lambda 1 t. So this will be my leading direction, second direction, and this will be necessary contracting direction if I am in a compressible case. Okay, so that's everything that I need for the moment is those numbers, the statement that this function has this maximum, or in other ways, that I have a different direction and pointing my vector in this direction and looking how logarithm of it grow and divided it by time, I get lambda 1, then pointing in another direction. And actually, isolated statement is those directions are frozen when I go into infinite time. So I can choose this direction at the initial instant of time such they will be at infinite time. So they fluctuate, and eventually they will stop fluctuating and will be pointing in those directions. Okay, so that's all you need. Now I am ready to go back to magnetic field and take the Fourier transform of this back and take it in the nth moment, and then substitute, express everything in terms of rho. And how detailed do you want my presentation? You want me to derive everything, hand wave, go in between? By the length of time. Okay, so I cannot resist pleasure to allow myself at least one more formula. So eventually, and of course, also now I have to start something about where I start from. Okay, I can now solve problem dynamical from the viewpoint of velocity field. I mean, I do have statistics of velocity, but I mean, physically more natural and also technically it's kind of straightforward is to have initial magnetic field also random. So when I will be saying that I'm calculating moments, those moments will be two averages. First average of initial statistics of magnetic field, and this will be assumed Gaussian, which is kind of, I can take any statistic. This is an easy part. And over the velocity statistics, and velocity statistics, you'll see, is surprisingly unimportant for most physical conclusions. So now let me write, if I write b squared, which is now only average over initial statistics, and of course I have to specify what is the initial pair correlation function, because I'm considering Gaussian statistics, is completely determined by a pair correlation function, and I guess, well, it's a solenoidal vector, so it has a projector form, b beta k prime 0, and here is this projector which gives me solenoidality. What is important that it has k squared. It has to behave at 0, it has to go to 0, because otherwise I cannot have a solenoidal vector without any anomaly at 0. Okay, and then there is some function. Well, we usually take it just Gaussian. So I assume that I have some initial distribution with some typical correlation scale. Okay. Now I substitute. Now I have to take second moment of this, substitute this into that, and then I have to take averages over velocity field. But before taking these averages, let me write what I'll get. After some manipulations, re-expressing one vector into another, I get an integration. Now I want a b squared at time t at some point r, let's say equal to 0, r equal to 0. So I have to make Fourier transform back, okay? It's this b squared, so it is d3 q, those are some, okay, let me write, dq1, dq2, dq3. Those are three components of the wave vector on which I'm making my Fourier transform. Here is my f of QL, this initial function. Okay. Here is my, actually, this k squared term with this projector, it will have the following form. It will have exponent of 2 rho 1 q2 squared plus q3 squared. I'm now writing transversal projector in terms of new wave vectors that will appear after a large time. So you remember that my wave vectors also evolve with W, and what is interesting for me from W is those rho 1, rho 2, rho 3 that really give me how the components of wave vector evolve in time. And this is the first component, and then it will be 2 rho 2, and here will be q1 squared plus q3 squared, etc. You can guess the rest of this factor. This is my projector. And then I have to have this diffusion exponent, which is the most interesting part of the story. And this is also could be written in terms of those rho 1, rho 2, rho 3. And it has the following form, exponent. And of course it is already 2 here. And it will be something like this. Kappa minus integral from 0 to t. And it will be q1 squared exponent of minus 2 rho 1. You remember that time went backwards here, okay? This is my final point where I want my k to arrive. So in this diffusion exponent, I have to integrate over its previous history. What were the values of my wave vector before? Because the dissipation is determined by all the previous history. So this is determined by what was the value of wave vector before it arrived to the given point where I calculate my transform. So it here goes in opposite direction, and it q2 squared exponent minus 2 rho 2 plus q3 squared exponent minus 2 rho 3. Okay, that's it. This is an integral over dt. dt. And then I have to integrate everything over wave vectors. Rho are random variables, random function of time. Now, this is only b squared average over initial statistics. Now, to do that average, I have to average this over statistics of rho. That's actually, what I did is a trivial thing, and I'm sure that many people did it before. It's very similar to what Grudzinov, Cowley, and Sudan wrote. It's very similar to what Zeldovich and Koosters wrote. I mean, so far, it's a trivial exercise. I did not do anything but average over Gaussian statistics of initial noise. Now the game starts. I have everything expressed in terms of these variables, and now I have to use my knowledge of what is the probability distribution of these variables to get the knowledge of the moments of magnetic field. That's how it works. Okay? And, okay, now I have to average overall. Now, the easiest part of it would be not to take this into power n. Well, of course, before taking, I would like to have, you know, moments number n and then average, because, I mean, that's what my goal is, not to take moments of already average quantity. I want to take moment and then average. And, of course, the easiest part of it would be to take logarithm of this b and then average it over the statistics of rho. Okay? Now and this would give me the slope at zero. This will give me the value of growth rate of magnetic field with a probability 1. Okay? And so let's call it gamma. Let's call it limit and term goes to infinity, this guy over t. Okay. Now how to play here. Okay? I ordered my rho 1, rho 2, rho 3 as being corresponding to most growing direction, next direction, and rho 3 is in an incompressible case, it should be negative, so it should be contracting direction. So first of all, if you look here, you see that here this is the growing exponent, okay? Here is minus rho 3. So it's a very big number, okay? And it restricts the integration over q3 in a very small domain, which is very clearly explained in the old paper by Zeldovich, that you don't want your wave numbers to point in the direction of contraction, because otherwise all such realization will be killed by diffusion. This is a very simple statement. That as long as you consider something which contributes the growth of magnetic field, you better have your wave vector of magnetic field to be directed in the direction which is not the direction of contraction. Because in the direction of contraction, wave number would grow, and then diffusion would kill this part, which is kind of uniformly, yeah. The k vectors are frozen in the fluid, of course. Yeah. It's b that has diffusivity. But, I mean, when I take distance between two points or wave number, I mean, this is something which is material element, and that's how I studied. Okay. And then you see that you may neglect q3 over here. Then it's only q2 left. And then what I do, I substitute this guy here. I take logarithm, and the moment I take logarithm, this whole integration, I can use t as a large parameter and make a saddle point integration with respect to this parameter. Then everything is determined by the minimum of this function. And this is precisely where this lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3 comes, because it is the maximum of this function which corresponds to these values. And then you may see, just without much details, one may see that when time is small, which means that time is smaller than logarithm of L over some diffusion scale, and this diffusion scale is actually proportional to kappa. Here I have a very small coefficient. So this will be unimportant unless time will be sufficiently large where this will be important. So unless this time is large, of course I will have an answer for ideal case. And in this case, gamma is equal to lambda 1. There is no doubt about it, and you can reproduce it from here. Now what happens now when time is larger? Then again, I take limit of infinite time first, and only then consider kappa to be small. In this case, what I will get? I will get this 2 lambda from here, but of course I have to define it by 2, because I want a logarithm b, okay? So I get 2 lambda 1 from here, and then I will have also contribution from this exponent. And from this exponent, I will have q3 and q2, and what is important that in this term, q3 I can neglect, but q2 exists. So I integrate over q2 squared, and over q3. As a result of it, you get a proper combination of lambda 1. Don't want to bother you, but now what I'm doing, I'm not now doing any path integral. I'm doing standard, the path integral I did the moment I substituted this distribution. This was a path integral over this variable. Those are random fields. In average over them is a path integral. This path integral I did in a saddle point approximation, substituting this guy and then taking the maximum of this function. After it, it's a standard integration over three variables, q1, q2, q3, and you get the answer, which is, to be completely honest, one has to take the difference between two exponents of the same sign. Which means that if you have two positive Lyapunov exponents, then you have to take the difference of them. If you have two negative Lyapunov exponents, then you have to take the difference of them. The statement, the moment that you have two different exponents of the same sign, two different Lyapunov exponents of the same sign, you have non-zero positive growth rate of magnetic field. That's a theorem. It's absolutely independent of what is the statistical velocity field. It has to be finite correlated in the Lagrangian frame. Okay? You see the same story, that your answer without diffusion and your answer with diffusion are different. Are different by a finite amount. And of course, this is also independent on diffusion, because it's considered that diffusion is the diffusivity is very small. Okay. And really, with a general velocity field, we can do anything more. So we cannot calculate this for any n, because now it would depend on the specific form of this function. It's only logarithm of b, which means growth rate, could be obtained independently and expressed only in terms of Lyapunov exponent, which are the coordinates of the maximum. The moment you would like to have higher moments of magnetic field, you have to specify velocity statistics. No free lunch in this case. But what is important, that what we really proved, we proved that even though this curve that we are looking for, here is Kazantsev value, it has a smaller slope. This slope was lambda 1, and this slope is lambda 1 minus lambda 2 over 2. For this delta correlated case, because it is time reversible, lambda 2 is equal to 0. So it's just lambda 1 over 2. So it's a statement that for delta correlated case in particular, this slope is twice smaller, but it's still positive. In a sense, there is a simple and nice physics, at least in this short correlated case. When I ask why my growth rate is twice smaller when I consider diffusivity. Because what determines your growth rate is the realization of the velocity that corresponds to the fastest stretching. Fluid is incompressible. To get fast stretching, it's better to compress from other direction. If you don't have diffusion, you just compress from all other direction and it gives you maximal stretching in some direction. Now with diffusion, you cannot afford to compress from all perpendicular direction because diffusion would kill such realization. What you need now, you need to compress only in one, as long as you stretch in some direction, you have to compress in some direction, that's for sure. But you have to compress in one direction, stretch in another direction, and keep one direction, what we call neutral. Which means that at such a large time regime where diffusivity plays, what you'll see aren't sheets and aren't rolls. They will be strips with one direction very large, with one direction very slow, and with one in between. Okay? And to see it, we made a next step. We calculated a different point correlation function to see that indeed, if you try to calculate correlation between B here, and B here, many point correlation function, then you could really see that those correlations are non-zero only when all points are on the strip, or at least they are substantially large. But to do this, let me first finish with single point moments, which means that I would like to calculate this En and get the formula. And this could be done again in this Kazantsev, Kreisman Kazantsev delta correlated case. As I told you, there is no free lunch, only growth rate one can get for arbitrary statistics. Now, if I specify statistics, which means that I'll say that velocity is short correlated, I can calculate this En function too, and it is, there are so many, here it is, and it is different. It is lambda 1, n over 2, n over 2 plus 4, over 8. So that what I had in the ideal case when there were no diffusivity. Or one may say this is the answer for not very large time. When your first diffusivity goes to zero and only then time. This is the answer on the opposite case when I have a time larger than diffusive time. One may check that when substituted n equal to 2 here, then it will give Kazantsev answer. That's okay. For any n, it is different. Derivative at zero is twice less, as one may check, etc. So this is the answer for single point moments. And to finish this story, let me just briefly mention what we can tell about different point correlation function of magnetic field. In a way, I'm not sure that astrophysicists are so eager to know what are the six point moments of magnetic field somewhere. But somehow for us it was interesting from a fundamental viewpoint because in a way you may say, look, I mean this is growing with faster than linear. In a way it's already telling you that magnetic field is getting more and more intermittent. And it's a trivial statement, I mean probably understood 40 years ago. That as long as the higher moments grow faster than nth power of the first moment or n over 2 power of the second moment, that means that your field somehow is concentrated in some very sharp events. And that's the meaning of intermittency. So in this sense, it's trivial. It's very intermittent. I mean, the moment it is convex like this, it is very intermittent. But for us, it was very interesting to see really what kind of intermittency, what are the structures that live inside. In a way, you already have a feeling of the structure when you calculate the single point moments. Then you see which rho 1, rho 2, and rho 3 give you contribution. And here you discover that you need rho 1 growing, which means that in one direction you have stretching. You need rho 3 contracting to keep the volume. And then you need rho 2 to stay, after some time, to stay finite. Not to grow and not to decay. Okay? And for moments, what we can do? We can, again, in this delta correlated case, we can calculate the moment, the two-point moment, okay? And this is, of course, has been done before, and it was very nicely written in Kurslund-Andersen paper. You may find it, and then you may discover that in this finite, in this delta-correlated case, it has this scaling. And of course, it grows with e to t, and it has some coefficient. What we were very much surprised to discover that the moment the velocity field is time reversible, not necessarily delta correlated, just enough to be time reversible, it has the same scaling 5 over 2 over here. Even more surprisingly, which I still don't understand, and this discovered by Fuchson, who arrived this Friday, that when you have compressible velocity field, finite correlated, in 3D, it's still 5 over 2. In 2D, it's already different. You vary degree of compressibility, you vary the scaling. Even more interesting is that you may calculate four-point correlation function, like B0T, BR1, BR2, BR3. And you may show that those correlation functions are anomalously small unless your four-point aren't on the same line. And this tells you that those you really have the strip configuration where your magnetic field sits. And there are some nice formula about some nice rule about six-order correlation function, but I guess I'm far beyond any astrophysical interest. So now let me reiterate. What is the conclusion? That I specialize my flow by its statistics, which means that velocity has this and that statistics. Okay. In principle, when it's short correlated, it's like you don't have time. It's like it's decorrelated. So it's time reversible by definition, in a way you just determine. But it might be that your statistics has a finite correlation time. And you may say, no, if I change time direction, we know that turbulence, three-dimensional Navier-Stokes, is not time reversible, because the third moment of velocity field is non-zero. Okay? If all the odd moments are zero, one may say that it's time-reversible statistics. If some of them non-zero, then you don't have time-reversible statistics. So in a way, time-reversible is something artificial, something that you have to create. The moment you have a turbulent cascade, you have time-reversible statistics, which is manifested in the fact that lambda 2 exponent is non-zero. In particular, from here, we may take numerically known the value of lambda 1 and lambda 2 and say what is the growth rate of magnetic field in a true Navier-Stokes turbulence for large parameter number. Okay? No. If it's time reversible, no. If it's time irreversible, yes. In a way, it is not known. Because I would love to have knowledge of true time irreversible statistics on Navier-Stokes, but I don't have. The only thing that I can measure, and which is really known, are the values of the Lyapunov exponents. So that's why we were so eager to get this expression for growth rate in these quantities. We cannot calculate them from Navier-Stokes, but at least we can measure them, and for any other situation. Okay, so to conclude, we've shown that in the limit of very large Prandtl number, when we have a big interval between viscous scale and diffusive scale, the fluctuation of magnetic field grow the moment you have two non-zero Lyapunov, I'm talking three dimensions now, the moment you have two different Lyapunov exponents of the same sign or whatever. As long as growth rate is positive, all other moments grow too. I mean, that's already given by convexity, and also we described what are the configurations of magnetic field that really provide for this growth at the limit of a very large time. Those configurations are strips of magnetic field. Yeah, thank you very much. Well, I mean, physically look, I'm working in an infinite system. I am assuming that my velocity field is my magnetic field is kind of everywhere, you know. If you take a blob of magnetic field, a finite blob of magnetic field, then eventually it will decay, of course. This is what happens until you reach the size of the blob, what happens inside, how small scale fluctuation grows. But any finite, any magnetic field which is concentrated in the finite region of space will eventually decay. That's Zeldovich said many years ago. Yeah. No. That's a shame. I mean, we have to do it. The only thing that also I forgot to say is that flux. It's always, Boris Shaiman always asked me about flux, and Misha always remind me to say. So, let me say, how the magnetic flux behaves? Because now I can calculate flux. I know how material element behaves, and I know how the field behaves in this. And I can show that magnetic flux, its growth rate is really decay rate, magnetic flux decays. In this case. Of course, in ideal case, it is conserved, because it's a frozen in. And when I have diffusivity, then magnetic flux decays. Again, no helicity, I mean, this is a different thing. Okay? So magnetic flux decays.
It's not sheets.
I mean, sheets, you would get something which is big in two directions. And this is big only in one direction. It's kind of small in and very small in the third direction. So I still would call it strip, that sheet. Huh? Relevance, yeah. Always nice to learn something from English. Okay. Yeah. You don't. I mean, in an ideal case, without diffusivity, of course you do. I mean, that's no problem. But diffusivity kills such configuration. It's actually, I mean, I guess you can just show that if it's axially symmetric, let's say axial symmetry would give you two exponents equal to each other, then you don't have fast dynamo or whatever. You don't have dynamo when diffusion is present. You know any nice two-sentence explanation why in the axisymmetric case? Yeah, neither do I. I mean, but surely it exists. I mean, you just have to think. So the only all you need imbalance, a little bit of imbalance between two directions. Then, and of course, in this way, one may show that in 2D there is no dynamo, but it was known. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. But you know probably this too, huh? Ah, the new version, yeah. This is the published version, I guess. There are even some... I would love to make a copy. Let me make a copy, because there are some notes of mine.
Are you going or coming back? I have a question for you about this talk.
Yeah, I'll be back in a minute. Oh, there is no Xerox here. This is Xerox too.
I'm almost done.
How much?
It's almost done.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So what do we have? We have this 1, 2, 3, 4.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Interesting curiosity. Uh-huh. Remember for log B squared, mm-hmm. lambda 1 minus lambda 2 over 2.
Mm-hmm.
That turns, if lambda 2 is 1/4 of lambda 1, you get a factor of 3/8.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same you got from E2. Yeah. You know, the ratio.
This is funny.
Yeah. So it's not, but you can't prove any.
Oh, yeah, and then the 1/4, yeah.
Can you do any of the other exponents? Any of the other exponents?
No. No. Lunch. Lunchtime, yeah. Just a second. Somebody wanted to ask me something.
One thing that we're interested in astrophysics is this small-scale dynamo in this situation where the initial field strength is large enough that when you start building up magnetic field is larger and larger K,
mm-hmm.
you reach saturation, energy saturation, before
it's what I'm trying to think about now,
okay.
how the feedback starts to work.
Okay, you know, yeah. we're doing some work on this.
Oh, let's talk about it, because, okay. I mean, that's... And my student who arrives this Friday,
okay.
that's actually kind of his probably main problem will be for some time. So
okay.
he just recently started, but... yeah, well, that's just very interesting.
But I have a question for you, which is related to that. If you think about the initial moment where saturation starts, so this is before resistivity has played a role.
Yeah.
One thing you're interested in knowing the nature of the initial sort of nonlinear feedback is what kind of structures do you have. And I was thinking there would be a mixture of structures which are like wide sheets, where you've had two directions of stretching, one of compression.
Yeah.
A mixture of that and a mixture of one direction of stretching. But from your talk, I now am thinking that
it depends. It depends what starts earlier. Either there are the play of diffusivity or feedback. You may have such situation in which feedback starts while your growth is still in the ideal conductor case. Then you are right. Then you are right. Then there will be mixture of sheets and tubes.
Will the tubes dominate the energy though? Because their exponent, like their exponent of stretching, is twice.
Now it depends on the statistics of your velocity field, whether it favors configuration with two contracting, one expanding direction, or to the contrary. I never thought about it, but that's, maybe you're right, that if to think about feedback, it's better to start not after our work, but just from a purely ideal case, that you have ideal growth, you know kind of what's going on, everything is like, and then what is the feedback? But feedback will be completely different, of course, in these two cases. Yeah.
Right. Well, think for example, if you have equal probability of forming sheets or long thin tubes. Say that you have, suppose just for argument that it's 50% chance of each.
Yeah.
Then won't the tubes have most of the energy because they have like they're stretching as much?
I don't know, but I can check it. I mean,
okay. I would have thought so, just because if the exponent, if you double the exponent,
yeah.
they have much more.
Yeah.
And then that has a different consequence for this feedback.
For this, I mean, you contract from two directions, you get twice larger expansion. So under, the, if you assume that they are the same probability, blah, blah, but here you have twice more growth rate. So in this sense, yes.
Yeah.
And you are ideal, yeah. And you are ideal, yeah. That's important.
Saturation. It's not clear what your initial field.
Oh, you may reach saturation well before. I mean... Yeah. And the plant may be so large that your feedback starts before diffusivity. That's true. And I'm thinking about doing feedback from ideal case first.
And of course, you may have both in astrophysics because it depends so much on your temperature. And you have different, like for example, one place where this is important is in protogalaxies, before the galaxy forms, where you have a range of temperatures depending upon how big the collapsing object is. A smaller object will tend to be cooler, more resistant, but a hotter object, like a 10 to the 12 solar mass protogalaxy, like might have formed our galaxy, would have a temperature on the order of a million degrees, very small resistivity, and then you can have even hotter objects, which are more massive. So you can be in different regimes. What we're focusing on right now is the non-resistive.
We would like to, I mean, there are a few of us here, and when we kind of get together, maybe you'll tell us a little bit of what you're doing, and then we'll discuss what are the questions here. But, I mean, for us, the problem is it's a little bit on a theoretical side, like you have a very small scale magnetic field. So I don't distinguish,
You can erase a little bit.
I'm trying to be polite to myself. I kind of don't distinguish what is this magnetic mass is created for, sheets or just it's some very small scale stuff. And I'm trying to get feedback, which means for velocity field, which is large scale. I mean, my disk, Planck is still big. So in this sense, I have to average over this small scale magnetic stuff and get something acting on large scale back on magnetic field. And we really did some kind of first simple exercise with Sergei Nazarenko, who today maybe will kind of make some informal talk during this week. But I mean, this is a very simple exercise. Like we have straining flow, and we put inside a magnetic spot. Magnetic spot means that I have a very small scale magnetic field, and in space it is restricted. Then in my velocity, and I have a simple straining velocity field, I just keep it at infinity. And so you have your magnetic spot kind of stretched, contracted, but then you put Lorentz force, and you see what is the secondary flow that your spot induces. And you see that it induces some counter vortices, and those vortices decrease. I don't know if somebody did it. If somebody did, you probably better advise. This was Sergei student who did it. But it's still non-analytic, it's numerically. But I wanted to see how it works before starting to do any analytics about it.
We have been working on this problem. We just submitted a paper. It looks like it's going to be accepted. I can get you a copy of it.
Yeah.
But basically, this is an idea I think was first proposed by Russell Kulstra 4 or 5 years ago, and it appeared printed in a paper.
Yeah, I know the paper.
With a small scale magnetic field, actually not the Kulstra and Anderson.
Yeah, but feedback part over there, it's below any critics. I mean, it's not even in field. What I mean, the qualitative idea is very, and it's kind of clear. But what actually he wanted is to have some kind of a turbulent viscosity from magnetic field. That magnetic field really provides for increasing viscosity, and that would kill turbulence, etc. Maybe it's true, and it will give you an intermediate regime, which is power law in time and not exponential in time. Which may be true, but certainly what he did... Actually, what you need is to say something about the correlation function of third order, which is VBB correlation function. Because when you write equation dV over dt, you have Lorentz force, which is BB. Now, if you want V squared, you will get on the right-hand side VBB. Now, what Korsluk did, he said that VBB is like square root of V squared, which means the second moment, multiplied by BB. There is no such statistic. I mean, I probably can cook such statistic, but I mean, it's out of question. I mean,
that wasn't even what I was referring to. I was referring to this. I think he never published this idea.
Ah, maybe there is something which I never saw.
There's an unpublished idea, which is, it's sort of published now. The idea is a small scale magnetic field filling all of space, but with a lot of energy, but on a small scale.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes your medium elastic. There is damping, but it's...
My student invented this idea too. I would love to see it turn into some formalism. Yeah, I mean, this is a very nice idea, I mean, and it's qualitatively very accurate.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. On Friday, the main genius will arrive and...